This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, right. Yeah, welcome to the episode 201 of The Lotus Effect, which is currently titled Bingo Card on Bingo Card Action. And it's,
boy, it really has been so far.
Yeah. What bingo card? And as you know by now, the show was made up. The content doesn't matter. And I'm Phone Boy.
Democrats piss me off.
Yeah, they piss me off too.
Deep state cocksucking pedo motherfuckers.
That's right. That's what we think of them here, and I'm Phoenix.
Yeah, so we'd like to. Oh my goodness, yeah. It's been kind of rough with some of the technology issues that are going on here. I might have you fire the next set of clips here as I welcome our people who are subscribed on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, whoever the hell that is. Why, or is there anybody subscribed? I don't know, but maybe I don't know. I'm kind of freaking out with all of this stuff. Are we ready to freak out? Can we freak out? Yeah.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, I'm freaking out back here because, yeah, there's just tech things that are fucky. And, you know, and so the Lotus is really affecting me differently.
That's
today.
How it's affecting you today.
Yeah, so however the Lotus is affecting you, wherever the Lotus is affecting you, please let us know.
I got mail, yay!
I got you a dollar.
Yeah, and we actually put a lot of time into putting this show together, and we like the value for value model, and that's how we operate, and it consists of the three T's of time, talent, and treasure. Now
we've been getting a lot of variety in those three T's of late.
Yes, we have. And if you're into the treasure, which I didn't even go see if we've got anything today, but
bad podcaster, get the spray bottle.
Yeah, so you could, but we can go to. I think I would have gotten notification of it through other means. So you go to lotuseffect.show and click on that green We Like Money button, and you can use PayPal or Cash App to send us some money. And if you want to do Cash App, it's $TheLotusEffect33.
Yep, that's the cash tag. And honestly, the last donation that we got, I got an immediate notification. It switched the accounts from my personal to the show account. And it actually scared me for a second because I forgot to switch them back. And when I looked at the balance, because I was waiting for a deduction to occur, and it would have basically wiped the balance out. So when I saw the balance for the show account and the difference was like, I thought, oh my God, what came out of my Cash App, and then I realized I was in the wrong fucking account. Because, you know, that's how the Lotus affected me that day.
That's right. Now, you can also visit our merch store at lotuseffect.shop, where you can buy our crap that's been smeared with brand feces. And you can also do a one-time or recurring donation via that site if you want to do that as well. And so this week, I'd like to acknowledge some feedback that we got on the last show. From America, he is on that massive dung, and he responded to episode 200. He said, thoroughly entertaining, very pleasant voices, good HBD discussion, and I'm not sure what that was. The whiskey bit lost me. It still tastes like cough syrup.
Some of them I can definitely see tasting like cough syrup for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, that's, you know, so he took a moment and sent us a response, and actually, you know, that's an example
of what we call sending the act back.
That's right. And so, and we understand that, yeah, it may not be about the money right now, and that's fine. And we're totally cool that things are that way, because, yeah.
Especially with the government shutdown because of the fucking Dems.
That's right, but whatever the case is, right? We know shit's all emotional right now. So,
almost want to drop the network clip. You don't have to tell me things are bad. We know things are bad.
Don't make me play it.
Well, I think at some point, if it gets much worse, we might have to start playing it again. But
yeah.
Irrelevant to the fact.
Okay. So anyway, I mean, we want to know that you're out there, and we're speaking into the void, and we want to hear from you that you're listening, that you're picking up our their radio waves, and it's maybe helping you think and maybe see things differently. So let us know. You know, let us know you're listening. So you can, you know, of course, if you know, we'd like to know that you're subscribing to the podcast, right? So just, you know, certainly do that, whatever means. And we should, you know, we're an Apple podcast, we're in Spotify, we should be findable is there. We have the website lotuseffect.show where you can find all of the links to and all of those things, and there's an RSS feed for all of your RSS feed needs. there's an RSS feed there. Now, the other thing you can do, right, is you can, and so America reached out to us on Mastodon. The massive dong, and my massive dong can be reached at phoneboy@lotuseffect.social. Phoenix is P.
I do not have a massive dong.
It's phoenix@lotuseffect.show. You can send us an email to idontgiveafuck@lotuseffect.show. Yes, Phoenix will get that very happily.
And I do respond to all emails.
Yes. You can also send us snail mail. Contact us in the back channel. We can do that. Now, we also would love it if you would join us during the show, which happen twice a week. We do this thing called 2.5 Bens. Other times we do this thing called Rideshare Radio. Either way, it starts at Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Specific time. And you can also do this show, right? This show starts at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, and then it goes into Studio 33, right?
And that lasts until we basically run out of requests, we'll talk about that when we start Studio 33 tonight, but yeah. Usually it goes until the wee hours of the morning.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, you can join us, and the way you do that is you just go to lotuseffect.live. There'll be an audio player there that you can stream and listen to whatever the stream is, right? That is at that time. And also there's links to get into the chat, right? So you can troll along with the head troll and see all of the snark that Cotton Gin is coming back up with and all of that. That's great. Now, and of course, the other thing you can do is that you can call 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, it sounds like some of our pedal heads are boozy with some of the shit they're chatting in the chat with. They are off the chain.
Yes. So now why in God's name would you call 253-237-3321? Well, this is where you can send us feedback, right, on all kinds of things. But you can also answer the question that we've asked, what we call the weigh-in topic. And this week, it's actually your best Halloween costume, right? Now, we also sometimes will take get these voicemails, which, of course, get transcribed by Google. And it just the translation is hilariously wrong, and it makes a potential show title that we use to consider when we actually release this thing. That's the list that we use to vote from. So
okay, and to clarify for the subject, it can either be a costume that you have done, worn, whatever, and pics are appreciated, or one that you have seen. So call 253-237-3321 and let us know.
Yes, you should do that because I think I need to take some advice from Dr. Johnny Fever here.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Yeah, but I ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
I'm the only one allowed to give him shit. And you guys can give us shit as long as it's respectful. Don't be anti-Semitic. Don't be prejudiced. That's my fucking job. But, you know, just don't be a shithead. We say it every week. We're going to keep saying it. Just be a decent human being.
Yeah, be excellent to each other, as Bill and Ted say.
Right? Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes. That is, I think that, I think I need that somewhere in here, too.
We probably should integrate that. But you know what? We should probably take some advice here, a little bit of feedback from Mr. Leslie Nielsen.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Yeah. Counting on us to do what exactly? I'm not sure, but okay.
Entertain the piss out of these people and make sure that our health segment is never, ever, ever.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
No, it is not brought to you by Pfizer. I can tell you that for certain. But what I can tell you is that almost 70% of U.S. adults would be deemed obese based on a new definition, according to a study.
The original five levels are big, healthy, husky, fluffy, and damn. People ask, what could be bigger than damn? The new level's called, oh, hell no.
Yes. Almost 70% of adults in the U.S. would be deemed to have obesity based on a new definition, according to research. Well, yeah, the traditional definition of obesity, typically based on having a body mass index of or BMI of 30 or greater, has long been contentious, not least as it does not differentiate between fat and muscle. Now, in an effort to tackle the issue, in January, medical experts, and we know what experts are.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, from around the world, called for a new definition to be adopted. Now, this would encompass people with a BMI of greater than 40 or those with a high BMI and at least one raised figure for measures such as waist circumference, waist to hip ratio, or waist to height ratio, or those with two such raised figures regardless of BMI, or those with direct measures of excess body fat based on scans. That sounds like a bunch of comic gobbledygook to me, but anyway. In addition, they said obesity would be split into two categories: clinical obesity, where there are signs of illness, and preclinical obesity, where there are not. Oh my God.
Oh, that's so dark.
Yes, it is so dark. The more division that's and conquering.
It's kind of like
pre-diabetes.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say. I'm like, this is the pre-diabetes shtick.
Oh my God, just like being pre-dead. Okay. Now, research suggests the vamped definition.
Wait a minute. That I just caught on to that. Dude, isn't everybody pre-dead from the time you're born?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I was still keeping up.
Yes. I think that that point was made by somebody else. Anyway. Now the research suggests the revamped definition could result in a dramatic rise in the prevalence of obesity among adults in the U.S. No, it'll just more accurately reflect what anyone who's watched the world get fatter and fatter already knows. Yeah.
Yeah, all you have to do is truly go out at all into public and you can see just absolutely rampant cases of people who are not just overweight, but like Fluffy says, you know, oh, hell no. Like, there's no use in being that huge. I was literally watching a police cam video. I love those things. And this fat influencer who literally is, I think she might be in her 20s at best. She's over 500 pounds and she's trying to convince people we should get free airline seats because it's not our fault. Oh no, bitch. Yes, it fucking is. It very much is. And anyone who's donating to this fucking propaganda, this woke ass shit of I'm huge and you have to accept me. No, folks. No, we really don't. Okay? Because when you get that fucking huge, there's a problem. Stop denying it. And for Christ's sake, stop wearing clothes like you're skinny. Bitch, you ain't. Sorry, that Phoenix rant needed to come out.
Yeah, and another thing.
Democrats piss me off.
There we go. Now, Dr. Lindsay Foreman, the first author of the study for Mass General Brigham in the U.S., said the increase in obesity prevalence based on the new definition was striking and was largely driven by people who would not have been considered to have obesity based on their BMI alone. Now, while traditional BMI-based criteria would mean 128,992 or 43% of the participants were deemed to have obesity, the team found this increased by nearly 60% using the new definition, encompassing 206,361 or 69%, dude, of participants. Now, for those aged 70 or older, prevalence under the new definition was 78%. Wow. Almost all those with obesity under the traditional definition and also had obesity under the new definition. However, the new definition meant 78,047 participants who would have not previously had considered to have obesity based on BMI alone would be deemed to have the condition. And of course, the new definition hasn't been approved yet or adopted. So, I mean, why not? I mean, they're moving the goalposts for fucking everything, it seems like. You know, we're talking about that with blood pressure a few episodes ago. I mean, why not this too, right? It's like, okay, yeah, everybody's obese. Well, yeah, pretty much everybody is obese. I don't need them the guidelines for that. But I guess, you know, as it was stated by Cotton Jen in the chat, yeah, they just move the goalposts so that they can prescribe drugs. That's pretty much what it's about, folks.
I want to point out an interesting coincidence. It's kind of a little wordplay, but did you notice the doctor's name is Foreman?
Yes.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
No.
Metformin, for diabetes.
Well, of course. I mean, yeah, they've
diabetes
been...
correlating with obesity. I'm just noticing the similarity in that particular thing. No, nothing big.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think it is probably. I think what we have to do here is, yeah, this is. I think we've got another. I think we got to move on to the next story. Do we not?
Yeah, I think it's about time to talk about which, this will get Sir Bemrose's attention, which alcohol is the healthiest? Well, scientists have an answer.
Bemrose needs more liquor.
There are several unwritten rules when it comes to alcohol. Whiskey makes you aggressive, wine turns you emotional, and tequila, it's the devil in a bottle. But in recent years, tequila's reputation has shifted. Once the fuel of spring break regrets, it's now touted as the cleanest option at the bar. Low calorie, additive free, and even hangover proof. But is there really such a thing as a healthier alcohol? David Jernigan, Assistant Dean of Public Health at Boston University, argues no. When marketing a product that inflicts human harm, you must do everything possible to create a halo effect. That strategy works, he adds, because most people overestimate how healthy their drinking habits really are. So how much truth is behind tequila's clean image? Or any claim that one kind of alcohol is better than another? Well, here's what science says. Myth number one, tequila gets you the drunkest. The idea that tequila, or any liquor, hits harder mostly comes down to serving size and perception. While the one drink equals one drink rule is helpful in theory, it's less reliable in practice. Pours at bars can vary. Wine glasses are often oversized, and most people don't measure what they're drinking. That inconsistency, not the alcohol type, leads people to think tequila or other spirits are stronger. Myth number two, tequila is hangover proof. While darker spirits like whiskey and bourbon typically contain more congeners? Phone boy, you would know that word.
Well, congeners, I think. And I can tell you, I learned firsthand that tequila is not hangover proof.
Well, these congeners, the chemical byproducts of fermentation and aging that can worsen hangover symptoms, it doesn't mean swapping your old-fashioned for tequila will keep you headache-free. Any alcohol disrupts sleep, dehydrates the body, and interferes with metabolism. Many hangover symptoms stem from lingering
toxic byproduct of alcohol breakdown. That's, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to pronounce that because it
tongue-tied you, yes.
It did. It totally tongue-tied me. But yes, it's the toxic byproduct of alcohol breakdown. And this is according to Brooke Scheller, a doctor of clinical nutrition and author of How to Eat and Change How You Drink. Acetaldehyde, or whatever that word is, builds up when the liver's ability to process alcohol is overwhelmed, triggering inflammation, oxidative stress, and the release of cytokines, immune molecules that contribute to headache and fatigue. That's why hydration or sugar content matters less than total ethanol load and metabolic rate. Myth number three, tequila and wine have health benefits. The beneficial part of the blue agave plant doesn't survive the tequila-making process. And to get the supposed benefits of red wine, you'd have to consume hundreds of glasses, and alcohol is ultimately a toxin. Myth number four, vodka and gin are the cleanest options. Vodka, gin, and tequila are often marketed as clean because they're distilled and made with natural ingredients. But the term clean isn't regulated by the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, meaning it has no official production standard or health implications. Some spirits may be lower in sugar or free of additives, but ethanol, no matter how distilled, still damages the liver, brain, and cardiovascular system. Now, the final myth, myth number five, is that beer is less harmful than hard liquor. We know beer can be carby and also contains more water than alcohol. That said, carbonation can potentially increase absorption. So in the end, none of it is really better for you. And even the World Health Organization says no alcohol is better.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, and generally, I think, and we were kind of discussing this in the chat. It's like, yeah, how it makes me feel anymore. It's not to say that I haven't had any recently, but I think I had that orange stuff one of the previous, cawthons, and I did not feel good that stuff did not agree with me or something.
Is not a whiskey that you drink straight. You mix that shit.
I know, but in any case, that was.
Your body has pretty much decided, because it's been a good minute since you've really drank more than a sip here and there. It tells you, you know, rather conclusively, no.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just not about that. I'm okay not to consume any alcohol. So, I'm also okay not consuming this next thing, because we get to talk about how sugar alcohols might be messing with your gut. When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, and diarrhea. Oh, God. Yeah, those commercials, just anyway.
Are you triggered yet?
Yes. As we become more aware of the health risks associated with added sugars, substitute sweeteners have never been more popular. Some, like aspartame, as in NutraSweet and Equal, saccharin, as in Sweet and Low, sucralose, as in Splenda.
That shit makes my stomach upset.
Lohan Go, which is monk fruit in the raw, and stevia, you might recognize by their brands, but sugar alcohols, another alternative, tend to fly under the radar. Now, sugar alcohols, also known as polyols, are carbohydrates that share chemical characteristics with both sugars and alcohols, hence their moniker. The article claims that there are health benefits, but some have digestive side effects like gas, bloating, cramping, and diarrhea. Yeah, that Vinnie Tortorich thing about, you know, about
oh yeah, the keto convention.
Yes, so now while sugar alcohols do occur naturally in a variety of fruits and vegetables, albeit in small amounts, the bulk of your intake probably consists of those that are in commercially produced products to serve as additives in sugar-free and reduced sugar sweet treats. Candy, ice cream, chewing gum, fruit spreads, and baked goods are all common sources. Oh my God. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. So if you've ever eaten a pint of Halo Top ice cream, and I have, or a few Quest bars, yes, both those contain sugar alcohols, in case you're curious, and you immediately find yourself fighting for your life in the bathroom, you're having the Jackson Pollock moment out of your ass, in other words, you probably want to know why. Why? It all comes down to how sugar alcohols are metabolized. Unlike regular sugar, they're physically challenging to process. They can't be digested or absorbed in the small intestine, which means they move onto the large intestine, or it says large interesting in the script. What the fuck was I thinking there?
You did not proofread your script, yes, sir.
Where they draw in water and are fermented by gut bacteria, leading to that glass, that stuff that you take Pepto-Bismol for.
The gas, the bloating, the Shiites.
Yes, exactly. The GI impact could be so pronounced that products containing the sugar alcohols sorbitol and mannitol are federally mandated to feature a warning on the nutrition label. Excessive consumption may have a laxative effect. Well, no shit, Sherlock.
You know what? I'm thinking, I believe that's what's in the... like peppermint lifesavers, because I know that warning is on a bag of those, and I know if you consume too many of those,
mannitol in particular has a tendency to linger in your intestines, offering triggering bloating and diarrhea as a result, according to Yale New Haven Health. Of course, the best way to prevent possible side effects is just not eat the products containing them. Quite simple.
Pretty simple.
That's right. I think I'd much rather do this next thing than eat anything with sugar alcohols in it.
I absolutely love doing this because should I, which I already do, so should you, start sniffing rosemary?
I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
So is there any truth to the Shakespearean phrase, rosemary for remembrance? Actually, yes. Research does indeed suggest that the common herb aids cognition and memory and may even slow down the progression of Alzheimer's in the brain. Where else the fuck would Alzheimer's be? Are you serious, folks? Wow. Like, that's an arbitrary thing right there. Like, goddamn, I got Alzheimer's foot. What the fuck?
All right, I gotta write that down.
So, while there are only a relatively small number of studies, a 2020 review of the literature concluded that rosemary is memory boosting. In one particular study, healthy participants who worked in a cubicle that smelled of rosemary did better on recall tasks, like memorizing a list of words, than those in odorless cubicles. Yeah, I don't want to be in an odorless cubicle. You can pump rosemary into my cubicle anytime. So, excitingly, rosemary has other health benefits too. Research in animals suggests that the herb could reduce some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease thanks to two chemical compounds found in the plant, carnosic and rosmarinic acid. Carnosic acid is known to promote human brain cells to produce a nerve growth factor, and rosmarinic acid has been shown to inhibit an enzyme called acetylcholesterase. Wow, I haven't seen these words since med school. Sorry, guys. And it inhibits it in mice. And drugs that inhibit ACHE, which is that word that I'm having trouble with, are already being used to manage Alzheimer's disease. And they expect to see a lot more rosemary research coming soon. And I think that would be fantastic. I absolutely love. In fact, I've got to get some fresh herbs for tomorrow night's dinner. But rosemary is one of my favorite herbs, whether it's dried or fresh. It just smells so good. And the oil, when you use it for the sinus treatment, oh, our house smells so fab.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think it is actually quite a thing that we've got here. And I was sitting here, of course, we have our lavender satchel here that we've been that we've rediscovered in the studio here, and
yeah, we literally are like snorting lavender in between stories and stuff. It's quite nice.
It is quite nice. So the smell of the oils when I do my sinus treatment. Yeah, it's 3 drops of peppermint, 1 drop of rose. Mary, 1 drop of white something.
It's geranium, rosemary, peppermint,
Anyway, there's 4, but
yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we have them downstairs, but okay. But you know what? And actually, this, I'm glad I got to smell the lavender because you know what? It made me happy.
Yeah, me too.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you! All right, now let's talk about this crushed by a car. A stranger comforted him until help arrived. Now they're getting married. I need a hero. A couple who met after one of them was run over and crushed by a car have tied the knot and celebrated with wedding photos at the crash scene. The story begins 5 years ago when Kirsty Southern rushed to help after spotting Ryan McLeod trapped underneath a vehicle. She had just left a swimming class when she saw a car's wheel flatten a man's leg. Oh, and the helpless victim banging wildly on the driver's side door, trying to get the motorist to move. Now, rushing over without a clue what to do, she ended up comforting him for some 40 minutes while emergency services arrived through the gridlocked traffic. Now, Southern left early from her swimming event and said that from where the swimming pool was, I glanced up and I saw this man go under a car. Wow, he was banging on the side of the car. Some lady was screaming. She was a first aider, and I went behind him to tell him to lean on me to make him comfortable, she told the Southwest News Service. Now, now Southern had said despite the circumstances, she remembered thinking how attractive he was as she cradled his head up in her lap and even checked if she was wearing a wedding ring. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's just
that
so
would
real.
Be me.
Yeah, that's just so real. She could see his lower leg was badly injured as the hapless driver reversed back over his in a bid to free him. And she reassured him everything would be okay till an ambulance arrived at the scene. I was run over twice, but I only remember being pinned down and banging, McLeod said. I didn't see Kirstie's face as she was sat behind me propping me up. Now, the accident ripped McLeod's ankle open and reduced the range of movement in his foot by about 5%. He was forced to undergo reconstructive surgery in Coventry and says he needs physiotherapy to lead a normal life. I still struggle wearing ankle support and have a regular physio, but it's how I met my wife, so I say it was worth it. You know, and it was during his hospital stay that McLeod appeared via Facebook for a witness to get in contact with him. His own Good Samaritan saw the plea, didn't hesitate to get in touch, and the pair reconnected several weeks later. I had a little Facebook look as I knew his name afterwards. I didn't message him, just a look, said Southern. They began chatting on social media and began dating soon after that, while COVID regulations would have had them socially distance. The pair moved in together and had a blissful 4 years before McLeod went down on bended knee over a special weekend getaway. But given his injury, his bride-to-be worried he'd hurt himself. It's a lovely story, and we still don't quite believe it, Southern admitted. Married life is like living in a cozy love story. We're in a beautiful bubble together, and it's absolute bliss. When it came time for the photos, they both knew that one had to be atop the pedestrian crossing where she first laid eyes on him as he laid there in her arms.
That is so cute.
Yes. That you know, that's...
That sounds like us in a way, except for neither one of us were ran over, well... Okay, not physically, but
yeah. That's a great story. I mean, honestly, that's something I think you know. I think we try to talk about on the show at times is there are things that we do as couples, right? Because you know we try to be each other's muse and give you know and sharing each other's joy and that kind of thing, and it makes it makes life a whole lot more fun, honestly. So, and
it really does.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you've just muted. You just phone boyed yourself.
I phone boyed myself because I was trying to multitask. Yes, I blame you. Why? Yeah. Well, you're breathing.
Yeah, exactly. But the act is that you know, sometimes showing what a healthy couple does, right? I think people don't always see what that looks like, right? Because you know everybody has their own
I wouldn't deem us a healthy couple, dude. We're batshit crazy.
Yeah, but here we are. I mean, honestly, this is a I know talking about those things sometimes is because, yeah, sometimes we have to have those difficult conversations, and it's okay, right? This is where communication is such a great thing, and that's...
Yeah, it's nice to be able to communicate with your partner without fear of being, you know, treated like shit or some other thing. But we're not going down that road. But
no,
the road we are going to go down is the one where we talk about how a flock of goats is hitting the slopes of Vermont at a ski resort as an eco-friendly landscaping option. I love this story. Is there a faster way to ruin someone's morning than by putting a team of landscapers with mowers and blowers next door at 8 a.m.? I don't think there is. But for the neighbors of Jay Peak Ski Resort in Vermont, that's a headache they're no longer forced to suffer with, because the resort has taken a flock of sheep and goats to manage the vegetation on the slopes during the summer months. I love this. I'm telling you, it's great. They nicknamed them the Chew Crew, and it's literally a line of merchandise sold to the animal adoring fans. It's a small ruminant of 150 that keep the weeds and other overgrowth in check while reducing erosion, cutting back on fossil fuel use, mimicking natural seed dispersal, and best of all, doing the job in silence apart from the occasional bleating or baying. Oh my God, it's so cute. It can take months of mowing and weed whacking to get the slopes ready for winter ski season. But so far this year, Jay Peak has opened their 385-acre mountain property to landscaping by goats and sheep, which administrators described as an easy decision. The animals were hired from Cloudbrook Grazing, a farm from a small town about 65 miles north of Jay Peak. Vermont's Agricultural Institute has provided a sophisticated digital fencing system that quickly establishes virtual borders for each ski slope and prevents the goats from overgrazing or wandering off. The project is in a trial period where the flock will chew down 25 acres under the watchful eye of the Institute and Cloudbrook's shepherd dog Helios. If it proves effective, the plan is to bring the flock back next year with a greater area of work. The goats are great at the trees and the goldenrod and the other types of brush, but the sheep really do well with the grasses, according to Adam Ricci, owner of Cloudbrook Grazing. And he told Vermont Public Radio this. So by mixing the two together, they pretty much get everything covered quite well. And if the animals begin to stray from the work area, they receive an irritating high-pitched noise from their collars. And if they continue, they'll receive a mild shock. Yeah, I don't like that. But another advantage to adding the goats to their resume is that it allows Jay's Peak to avoid using pesticides. That's even better. So it's good for the environment, according to Andy Stringer, director of mountain operations at Jay Peak. Now, of course, you know, he was yakking with Vermont Public Radio about that and said it doesn't take a lot of convincing for them to hop on board with the idea. Nor did it take much convincing for Dan Smith, the executive director of the Agritech Institute, who admitted he'd been skiing at Jay Peak for decades. White privilege. Nor did it take much convincing for the Chew Crew, who happily meandered and munched their way through the pasture in the mountain sunshine, mowing down blackberry, poison oak, and other nasty plants without a care in the world. I think that is so cute. I would love to see this flock just munching away on the slopes in Vermont. That'd be groovy.
Yeah, I think it'd be amazing. Now, what is also amazing is we have a cavalcade of stupidity from the Rev himself.
Woohoo!
So let's go. We'll play it.
Heidi ho, pedal heads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Hailing from Houston, Texas, Trout Fishing in America is an American musical duo comprised of Keith Grimwood and Ezra Eidlin.
Previously, members of the folk rock band St. Elmo's Fire, they took their name from the novel Trout Fishing in America. Since 1979, the duo has released 24 studio albums through their own label, Trout Records. Trout Fishing in America is known for its varied musical styles, with albums alternating between folk rock and children's music, as well as their dynamic stage presence. In addition to their music, Trout Fishing in America holds songwriting workshops for children. From their 2008 album, Big Round World, this is Trout Fishing in America. It must be Halloween.
Old jack-o'-lanterns grinning, point jagged yellow teeth at me. Time for vampires and cobwebs and candy. It must be Halloween. When the full moon rises at midnight, the werewolf will make you scream. Time for skeletons and witches and cookies. It must be Halloween. Time for trick-or-treat. Give me something good to eat or you'll be sorry. I'm talking M&M's, not talking vitamins, or you'll be sorry. Blocking my sidewalk, a pack of goblins are crossing the street. Time for mummies and baddies and candied apples. It must be Halloween. Well, I'm not saying I'm scared, I'm just telling you what I've seen. Zombies and ghouls and gummy bears. It must be Halloween.
That's all I need to say about that.
Weed-laced gummy bears.
Yes, exactly. Well,
what was that, over in like Sweden or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, something like that. But it was probably made in a Hollywood basement or something, I'm sure. Okay.
Well, we would like to appreciate and thank the Rev for that submission. That was awesome.
Yes, we're, for sure. We are, yeah, so we will play the full version, of course, in Studio 33, as we do.
Of course.
And it's been a couple of weeks since we talked about rideshare. I mean, I think we have some stuff to talk about, don't we?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think, wait a minute. Yeah, we had a lot of stuff happen last night, I think, and this was stuff that we had talked about previously.
Yeah, I'm looking at the script going, that's not recent. We've already done that.
Yeah, I guess we have. And episode 199.5, I think.
Yeah, 199.5. Oh, shit. Yeah. Which means it didn't get talked about, did it?
No.
Well, fuck it. It's no longer really relevant other than to say we got a new Ben's listener, possibly more than one at this point. I actually met a guy who actually works in digital forensics, which is insane because that's the course I dropped because my brain started to sizzle trying to do it. I got way in the weeds. I'll handle it next fall. Not worried.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting to chat with him. And yeah, 2 weeks ago, I had I talked about an unbelievable night. I made like over $600. It was fucking insane. Last night was a douche. I made enough to make myself happy, pay my bills, etc. But Lamey fucking Wilson was playing at Thompson Bowling. And OM fucking G, the traffic, just nope. I had to take two rides. Thankfully, my passengers were kind enough to get the fuck out and walk at a point that allowed me to bust off to the left and get foe from the area. And then if I saw an address that was around that area, I just didn't take the ride. I'm like, nope, there's plenty of other rides out here. I'd rather take numerous, you know, $10 or less rides and not have to go anywhere near that than to be grabbing up 20 and 30 and sit in that traffic. That math doesn't math. Sorry.
Yeah.
And
no, we had the guy last night that actually dropped some.
Oh my gosh, yes. So this guy that I brought to the strip club in Alcoa, which I'm familiar with. I've brought people there before and I've even taken some of the dancers there. And he had some pretty decent musical requests, some stuff that I hadn't heard before, some stuff I hadn't heard in a while, and he was enjoying playing along, essentially. It was fun.
Yeah, and I think, and, you know, again, this is why we do this, why we do this music thing, because I think it's important to sort of communally share, you know, and we share through music. I mean, and every song has a different meaning to somebody, and it's a nice experience. To just hang out and do something, you know, for the sake of doing it, and not
I also had a I also had a truck driver who I picked up, and I gave him one of the marketing ducks, and we were talking about music, and it was a great time. And I was thinking, like, you know, if he tells other drivers about, you know, our show and music thing, because, you know, music is really important to drivers. I'm sure that, you know, Rev Cybertrucker can attest to that. I know Tigger can attest to it and whatnot. And then I had a couple of women that were all excited when I gave them a duck, especially because one of them has a Jeep. And it was fun because you got kind of some confirmation when I was telling you that story, because we were on the phone with Tigger at the same time and talking about the putting the duck on the fender or the
right.
the hood. If you see a Jeep and you like the style or whatever, whatever. And she, you know, she confirmed, like, yeah, that's how it works. So the fact she was excited to get a duck because she has a Jeep just kind of touched me.
Well, there we go. Yeah. So, like I said, we had a good night last night. I mean, with the whole Ride Share Radio thing, and we even, you know, and even had a late night car game, which, you know, that's, I don't think we're going to do
really late night.
I don't think we're going to do that tonight, but,
No, definitely not.
No, but anyway, it just kind of confirms that, you know, you get into the sort of the vibe when you're downtown and stuff, right? And I think it's a, you know, the people that are out on Friday night are, you know, are going someplace. They're, you know, they're probably happy to be around. And unfortunately, a lot of what you deal with, like, during the week is maybe not so, people who aren't so happy with what's going on, I guess. But
yeah, the energy is most definitely much better.
Yeah.
During the Friday evening.
Yeah.
It's actually made the fact we've been doing True Rideshare Radios the last month or so, because, you know, every other week we do 2.5 bends. It's really making it fun. And I've been going back and forth on whether or not to work on Halloween and do like a double tap of 2.5 bends, like, to catch up, or, you know, maybe pre-record one and, like, play it on Halloween. Like, I don't know, but I haven't decided because there is a home game for UT that night, and I don't want to get into the same snarl that I got into last night with the concert, because the venue is basically next to each other.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
It's a problem.
Yeah. So anyway, I think, we'll figure that out.
It's not something we have to worry about right now, but last night was absolutely amazing. Like, if you've never experienced Rideshare Radio, if you've never been in the chat for it, like, jump in the chat, you know, go to lotuseffect.live, all the information you need to figure out how to get into the chat, how to listen live, how to do all the things you want to do. Hook it up. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, come hang out with us. I mean, it's just what it's about. We're not, you know, we're not here. We're, you know, we're just trying to be friendly. Come and watch us sing and play. You know, I mean, come on.
And we're trying to kind of create a community, if you will. You know, people who really appreciate music and like to share their music with other people and not be judged for it. I mean, yeah, okay, a little poking of fun here and there. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's really cool to hear music that you've never been exposed to before.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it makes us realize that we're not all that different. I mean, because I see some of the lyrics in some of the songs. I go, I wouldn't have listened to that because it was metal, but yeah, it's pretty fucking deep, you know? And there's still some art in there. There's art everywhere you look. It's, you know, it's not it for everything, but we're about music here. And, that's why we have this gentleman who is the best lead singer for Van Halen singing this clip to introduce the Toast and Jam segment.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
Yes, and I have a feeling Phone Boy's special plans are going to be to tell you to call 253-237-3321 and weigh in on your favorite Halloween costume, either one you've worn or one you have seen. And I'm sure that all of you are wondering, other than his goose after that, what I will be cooking tonight.
I'm making, like, actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
Yeah, no Denny's tonight. We are having some smash burgers that I pre-made and froze nicely undercooked. So when they are heated up, they will be cooked to the perfect temperature. It's going to be so good. It's absolutely...
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Yes. So what are we going to talk about this week? Well, we have this. We had one of our green room sessions. We came up with this great idea. We should, because we love the Lorian and Spencer calendar, which,
hope they do another one. It's so awesome.
Yes. So we were thinking we might do something similar. And we would. And so
we're not going to get naked.
No,
boys.
But no, we are going to show pussies if that's the kind of animals that you want.
We might even show some cocks if you're into aviaries.
Exactly. Right. So whatever pets you want to take pictures of. We're probably going to have to create some sort of email address or something for that, for people to mail them in, or
Send them to lotuseffect.show.
Yes, you could do that. That's true.
Sharky was talking about taking photos of his bearded dragon.
Yes.
I don't know if that's code for something. Mrs. Sharky might not be impressed by that.
I think I know what it is, though. It's a
no,
lizard.
Yes, a bearded dragon is a lizard. I was making an inappropriate joke.
Of course you were, yes.
That's the point!
Yeah.
This whole show is obscene. That's the point.
Exactly. So,
but yes, please send us photos of your kitties, your puppies, whatever pet you have. You know, if it's a snake, that's okay too. Please, no arachnids. Seriously, I can't even. I'm that damn phobic.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Just thinking about it gives me the creepy crawlies. Snakes don't bother me, but like scorpions and spiders, nope, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
No can do. But please send us pictures of your pets if you would like them included in the calendar. Of course, the proceeds for the calendar will be put in a special account for the next time one of our pedal heads needs some help, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to, that's usually what that money does, is it just kind of sits there. So,
we might occasionally, use it to keep the show going for something unexpected.
It pays for like the mastodon. So that's
okay. It's paying for our sex life. The massive dong.
Yeah, the massive dong.
Phenomenal.
Yes. Exactly. So, all right. Anyway, so the other thing I think we have to talk about is like years ago I used to do this podcast called Phone Boy Speaks because I needed an outlet, right? And I needed to find
formerly
my voice.
Known as the ramblings of a madman.
Yeah. Well, and I decided to ramble into a camera instead. We're gonna put a link to this in the show notes, and I posted it to the dong because I've kind of realized that there's a lot of things that I'm kind of figuring out that other people might want to know, and so especially with all of the weird shit that's been going on lately, it's starting to see a lot of shit things are starting to make sense, and I'm doing the ramblings of a madman, I guess, and so I had a few things to say. I went out into the forest earlier this week, and it was very nice to be out and just.
I think he found some fucking mushrooms. I'm just gonna point that out.
I can neither confirm nor deny that there were any mushrooms, but. Anyway, so I recorded some stuff, and honestly, for some of the stuff that I've been thinking about to kind of ways to look at the world that might help you not go crazy in it. I'm coming up with some stuff and going to do it in video form because I think it seems to me that for better or worse, YouTube is still sort of out there and it seems like that it's something that we should probably expand into on some level. And so as I'm kind of thinking of, as these things kind of come to mind and I feel like recording them, they're going to go probably going to be on YouTube. So you guys can follow that. I'm sure I'll create a channel at some point and do some like actual marketing. But this was kind of the test run just to see what kind of feedback I've gotten. And I've already, let's see, how do I know I'm on the right track? Somebody immediately and just took to doing like personal insults on me.
Yeah, because they have nothing better to do than be a fucking mouth breather.
Yes.
And they know who they are and they can go fuck themselves.
That's right. And then, you know, somebody else said, hey, I hope you do more of those. Yeah. So I don't know that. So that always tells me I'm probably on the right
There's
track.
There's always somebody out there, dear, that's going to shit on what you do because people are fucking miserable and they have nothing better to do than either troll or be dickheads. There's a difference, however, between the type of trolling.
Exactly. So, like I said, it was just one of those things that, I felt like it was time to, you know, I don't know, I sit in front of cameras and talk into the microphones all the fucking time, right? It's about time I do something. I say something for myself instead of saying something for somebody else. That's all I'm saying. So, that's what that's about, and who knows what that's going to turn into. But as I say, I got more to say now, so I might as well. Hopefully it'll make sense to somebody.
Since I told him he was killing me, he had to like go spout that somewhere else. I guess he decided that the wilderness was the place to do it, into a camera.
Yeah, into a camera. So there you go. All right. So is there anything else you want to talk about on the Toast and Jam?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I think it's time to hear from our pedal heads about their Halloween costumes.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321, like these pedal heads did.
Yeah, so and we actually have we have from Dame Jennifer here, because I check our texts first before we start to and so this is what so Dame Jennifer had sent a picture of Benji, I think, for
Yes, he's such a cutie pie. I can't wait to put that in there. He's such a good boy.
Yes. All right. So meanwhile, we have some other voicemails here, and this is we're gonna start here.
Howdy, ho. It's the fun boy. It's the Phoenix. It's Saturday. It's bloviating. Yeah. Just confirming the question here on the dong. No, yes. Something about food, I think. Favorite home cooked meal. So, I feel like I've talked about food recently a few times because you guys have. Those on my not so great Bluetooth. Just because that's what the question's been. So I feel like I probably already answered it. So, like, my wife just makes a lot of great stuff. There's that. And then I don't really do home cooked. I just kind of go to the chili and the stuff. I've already talked about this. You don't need to hear about it more. But, dude, there was some stuff my grandma made, like, just enchiladas. Shouldn't say just, but like enchilada. Or no, she made this Mexican, they called it like Mexican casserole. You just eat it with chips, and there was chips in there and ground beef and cheese and stuff. I guess probably pretty basic, but like just good, man, and nostalgic. So stuff like that. My dad has done like growing up, like stuffed bell peppers. Yeah. So I don't know. Oh. Anyway. That's about it. Just watering some stuff. So, if you hear noise in the background, that's what it is. Anyway, hope you guys are having a fantabulous time in the Lotus room, whatever. And yeah, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not you're getting hosed or you're hosing down plants, go ahead and give a hearty, hearty.
All right. So, yeah, I think this is one of the calls that got lost in the episode 199.5, episode 200. Oh, this actually, that's right. That's what we did. This was episode 200. He called on an episode 200 and he answered the call in episode 199.5. And yeah, right. So we kind of lost that call. All right. So that's what happened there. So, I think we go on to the next call now.
I think we should.
Yeah, I think we should now. So I've got to find my mouse here and I got to click on this and then I got to click on this.
Hey, favorite Halloween costume. I think the favorite one I ever saw, and you can do this yourself, it's not too hard, actually. Go to Goodwill, pick out some clothes, doesn't matter what kind, it can be jeans and a t-shirt, it can be a dress, it can be just whatever strikes your fancy. You just, you pick out some old clothes that you don't mind ruining. Get those clothes home. Get out some of those little single-serve cereal boxes and your hot glue gun, and you glue the boxes to the clothing, right? Then you get plastic spoons, and you stab one into all of the boxes of cereal. And you're probably thinking, well, that's really fucking weird. What is that supposed to be? Well, bingo, you're a serial killer. Talk to you later. Bye.
That was probably the most longest drawn out dad joke I've ever heard. Thank you,
Dame. I'd say JCD would probably call that a Shaggy Dog story.
Oh, big time. About as shaggy as Benji. Do you see a resemblance here?
Yeah.
He's shaggy, and her story was.
Okay, well, let's have another call here that we're going to play now.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Oh, Phoenix, my boy. It's a Saturday. Trying to think of different Halloween costumes I've had throughout all the years. Growing up, we had a friend who, my friend's mom, was a makeup artist for, like, community theater stuff. So, anyway, I remember having some, like, kind of knit shit off to make costumes for us. And then my mom would help her or whatever. But anyway, I did stuff. I can remember one time I was like Lieutenant Commander Worf from Star Trek. I was like Cowardly Lion one time, which was not a fan of because I remember I had to wear like, the costume looked cool. It's like, I had like a dyed sweatshirt and stuff like that to look like a lion, but summertime and you're wearing sweats and I run warm to begin with. So I remember not liking it because of the heat, but, yeah, looking back on them, they were fun. My wife and I, she usually picks them out. She always picks them out, but something we can either already have or buy and maybe something gets returned, but just a piece of it or something. Anyway, but we never do like couple of costumes. It's always like, yeah, like, this year I was Sloth, so I got a Sloth mask. I think it was Sloth, and, she was, Chunk. So Sloth and Chunk from the Goonies. So anyway. And then, we were like the mice, Gus Gus and whatever from Cinderella one year and just depending on the theme. So anyway, yeah. But I don't know. I don't have a favorite. Bottom line, so they're just kind of fun. So anyway, but yeah, anyway, that's it. Love you guys. Stay dangerous. Whether or not there's apples or there's lemons, go ahead and give a hearty hearty caw.
Caw caw.
Hey,
you know, bobbing for apples would be fun.
Oh yeah,
I haven't done that in a hot minute.
Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, so
derailed your mind for a moment.
Okay,
there.
Hold on. I think we have another. Let's see. This is who is this? That's a voicemail, I think.
It looks like it might be from Mama.
Yes, it's from Mama. Yeah, can you read that?
Yeah, it says for a Halloween costume, I would go as Yaphet from Orville. Norm MacDonald did the voice. I'm not familiar.
Neither am I, but okay.
Interesting.
Well, today we learned. All right, so we have I think we have. Let's see. So we've got one more voicemail here, and we're gonna I think we're gonna be frightened at what this is.
Oh yes, especially from the
number. Yes,
that.
So we've got a conundrum here. One person thinks that the scariest and best Halloween costume is going as a congressman. Another one says, "No, you want to go for clowns." My response, yeah, and then of course. They're the same thing. But what if you took the bastard love child of Pennywise, Michael Myers, Leatherface's skin outfit from his last victim, a congressman, and then a little splash of unicorn farts? That would be the perfect Halloween costume. I don't know what it would look like. It would be some sort of bastard love child of, you know, I don't know. Who's the guy with, oh, Edward Scissorhands and Freddy Krueger? Only kind of better dressed, holding a red balloon. Sound about right?
Sound about right, yeah.
Sound about right?
99.
Oh, yeah, and he's got to be holding 99 red balloons, along with a following of 99 dead baboons. Must have. All right, Rachel's going. She's lost her fucking mind. But we already knew that. Hey, say hey.
Hey, everybody. Hey,
there we go. You've got three hays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I come by, and there goes Tosh. No, Tosh, you can't go outside. Seriously, cat.
That was the best. That entire thing was bitching at Tasha.
Yes.
God. Rachel didn't have a mind to begin with, so I don't know how you can lose something you didn't have. But I don't want to know what drunken debauchery created that particular montage of creature bastard love children.
Yeah, I don't even want to know. Okay, the problem is that I'm going to have to figure this crap out, and it's bugging me because, yeah, I need to play the song that she wanted. Anyway, I'm going to have to fix stuff.
That's a Studio 33 problem. Can we actually get there before you worry about it? I'm just kind of worried about you at this point.
Yeah.
I think you might possibly be high.
I'll take a drink, and I might even smoke a little reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
No, I certainly don't. And I sure as hell would not want to be in the Caribbean at this point or anywhere near South America with the shit Trump's been doing, because Colombia has made a bold offer to Trump: legal weed exports for peace.
All we are saying.
You ain't right.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, if anybody you would think would be for this kind of peace, it would be John Lennon. Come on.
I mean, true, but, you know, I can't even with you. So, Colombian President Gustavo Petro opened a controversial new front line by proposing to President 47, Donnie Trump, more than just a trade adjustment. He asked that the export of cannabis be legalized like any other good, given its exclusion from the UN list of dangerous substances. Now, this was through a post on X. The idea isn't limited to marijuana as an agricultural product, but rather Petro ties it to a broader plan to transform Colombia's rural economy, eliminating tariffs, opening long-term contracts for farmers in crop substitution areas, and attracting agro-industrial investments that'll help farmers relocate to fertile lands near cities and not adopt the jungle as a form of survival. Now, for advocates of cannabis reform, the situation paints an intriguing picture. The proposal to bring a marginalized crop out of the underground, carve out a legitimate place for it in international trade, and empower growers. The proposal comes in a context of diplomatic rift with the U.S. Trump accused Petro of being an illegal drug leader and announced in a threatening tone the suspension of aid and tariffs for Colombia, a country who repeatedly misnamed
it's
a spelling thing of
Colombia versus you.
In response, Petro not only proposes the legalization of cannabis, but also shifts blame for Colombia's conflict onto foreign consumption. Colombia puts up the money and the deaths, and the U.S. provides the consumption. This shift flips the traditional narrative. No longer Colombia produces, the U.S. consumes, instead demanding the opening of legal markets to replace illicit ones and make regulation part of the plan. He also called to scientifically study whether prohibition is truly necessary or whether instead a model of responsible state-regulated consumption would be more effective. I think this is insane. Especially with the fact that Trump has been just blowing up boats under the guise that they're drug ships. And, oh my God, people's heads are lit on fire. I can't even talk about it.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't really give a fuck, doo-dah, doo-dah. I mean, that's just kind of what it comes down to.
I mean, sadly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I got to this story, I had to do the RCA dog thing because, so apparently there's a whiskey company that is scaling back its operations, citing consumer shifts toward marijuana as alcohol alternative.
And then there are your friends who smoke marijuana going, God, man, alcohol's a crutch. Really? Really, Captain Herbalife?
Yeah. A popular independent craft spirits distillery says it's scaling back its operations due in part to the fact that more adults are choosing marijuana over alcohol. Heritage Distilling Company, which has distillery locations for its whiskey and other spirits in Oregon and Washington State, where cannabis is legal. Yes, I know these motherfuckers because they had a location in Gig Harbor. They said on Thursday that a confluence of factors informed its decision to close tasting rooms, shift to contract production partnerships, and focus on direct-to-consumer sales. Now, the company listed four specific considerations that led to the consolidation of its operator. And this includes consumer shifts toward reduced alcohol consumption and alternative products, including marijuana. Now, the shift is being closely monitored across the alcohol industry. Earlier this year, the CEO of Brown-Forman Corporation, which produces brands such as Jack Daniel's and Woodford Reserve, said the growing use of marijuana as an alternative to alcohol is putting pressure on the spirits industry. This week, new congressional lobbying reports shows that many major companies such as Anheuser-Busch, Bacardi North America, and Moet Hennessy USA are engaged in federal lobbying to influence cannabis policy amid the surge of interest into THC beverages.
Sounds to me like they are scared of their nut getting infringed upon.
For more than a decade, Heritage Distilling tasting rooms were places for friends and family to gather and enjoy each other's company in great spirits. And I've done that a couple times. According to Jennifer Stiefel, the president of Heritage Distilling, and she said in a press release on Thursday, and as we head into the final stretch of the year, we wanted to give our customers and club members 2 months of lead time to plan their final visits to our tasting rooms, to share in great memories, and to thank the staff who helped them along their customer journey. The company also listed tax and regulatory challenges in Oregon and Washington, as additional reasons for business model change. Yeah, they're not very friendly to, I don't know. They're just not friendly states to even fucking live in.
I love what Weirdo just said in the chat. He said, "Aw, shucks, fewer broken homes due to alcohol. We'll never financially recover from this." Well spoken, dude.
Well spoken, sir. Yes, exactly. So, oh boy.
You know you want it. You know you've been waiting all show for it. It is none other than the Lotus Tech Tips.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
I think I'm just going to play the clip and then we'll talk about it.
I'm sure it's only a glitch. A temporary setback. You call this a glitch?
That's how you know you fucked up.
We couldn't not report on this big ass fuck up. Amazon's DNS problem knocked out half the web, likely costing billions. So as most of the world knows, on Monday afternoon, Amazon confirmed that an outage affecting Amazon Web Services cloud hosting, which had impacted millions across the internet, had been resolved. Yeah. Considered the worst outage since last year's CrowdStrike chaos, Amazon's outage caused global turmoil, according to Reuters. AWS is the world's largest cloud provider and therefore the backbone of much of the internet, ZDNet noted. Ultimately, more than 28 AWS services were disrupted, causing perhaps billions in damages, according to one analyst that estimated for CNN. Popular apps like Snapchat, Signal, and Reddit went dark. Flights got delayed. Banks and financial services went down. Massive games like Fortnite could not be accessed. Some of Amazon's own services were hit too, including its e-commerce platform, Alexa, and Prime Video. Ultimately, millions of businesses simply stopped operating, unable to log employees into their systems or accept payments for their goods. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop right here and say something. what the fuck you get for putting all your eggs in one basket, you dumb motherfuckers. So the incident highlights the complexity and fragility of the internet, as well as how much every aspect of our work depends on the internet to work. According to a person who I'm not even going to try to pronounce their name, they're the CEO of an internet performance monitoring firm called Catchpoint. Now, the financial impact of this outage will easily reach into the hundreds of billions due to loss in productivity for millions of workers that can't do their jobs, plus business operations that are stopped or delayed from airlines to factories. Amazon's problems originated at a U.S. site that is its oldest and largest for web services and often the default region for many AWS services, according to Reuters. The same site has experienced two previous outages, one in 2020 and one in 2021. But while the tech giant had confirmed that those issues had been fully mitigated, apparently the fixes did not ensure stability into 2025. ZDNet noted that Amazon's first sign of the outage was increased error rates and latency across numerous key services tied to its cloud database technology. Although engineers later identified a DNS, domain name service, resolution problem as the root of these issues and quickly fixed it, other AWS services began to fail in its wake, leaving the platform still impaired as more than two dozen AWS services shut down. It was a massive domino effect, folks. Again, you get what you fucking deserve. This is what happens when you build your entire infrastructure of technology on sand. So at the peak of the outage on Monday, Down Detector tracked more than 8 million reports globally from users panicked by the outage, according to ZDNet. Ken Berman, a computer science professor at Cornell University, told Reuters that software developers need to build better fault tolerance, suggesting Amazon provides tools that could have shielded them from the latest outage. Yeah, wasn't it like a typo in a DNS script that caused this to begin with?
And my thought process on all of this is, look, you could... They've given you the tools to actually do this right. And what did you do? You deployed your application in US East 1 and didn't deploy it anywhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah, this
single
is,
point of failure.
Yeah, it was basically, you all could have easily gone around this by making sure your applications are deployed, you know, in multiple clouds across different regions and maybe not the default region that everybody fucking uses.
Yeah, but
hey,
that
that's
would
just
be
my
smart
opinion,
and
man.
Make sense.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Well, when people cut costs and cut corners to try to get an application up and then forget that they skipped the last step and didn't really protect against an outage, those companies are the ones who really ought to be scrutinized later, according to Berman. Now, for Amazon, the backlash risks hitting its bottom line hard if too many customers pivot to other cloud technology providers. Financial service firms, which may be the most risk adverse of Amazon's customers, think the solution might be a multi-cloud strategy. Well, no shit, Sherlock. This would, of course, distribute critical workloads across two or more major providers, such as AWS, Microsoft Azure, and Google Cloud, according to Forbes. Why on God's green earth, people, why are you not the digital forensic guy? The company he works for is smart enough to have multi-cloud deployment. We were having that conversation during the ride. And that should just be basic tech 101, for fuck's sake.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole reason you put it in the cloud is to make it more resilient and such. Well,
yeah,
if you don't,
what happens
if you don't actually,
when you put all your eggs in one basket?
Yeah, well, that's why you use multiple baskets. And yeah, like I said, if you build it resiliently, you can build more resilient apps in the cloud, perhaps, but you still have to actually do the work. You can't just put it in the cloud and make it actually fucking, you know, assume it's going to actually work correctly. You know, I mean, shit happens. You know, we still can't get DNS right. And then we have the next story here where we talk about how Robbie Starbuck is actually suing Google after their AI bot accused him of sexual assault and links to white supremacy and all kinds of shit.
How can they just lie like that?
Yeah. So conservative influencer Robbie Starbuck is suing Google after he alleged that his artificial intelligence powered chat, or their Google's in artificial intelligence powered chatbot, falsely linked him to a sexual assault allegation as well as to notorious white nationalist Richard Spencer. Now, Starbuck, who has wrapped up wins by forcing some of America's largest companies to roll back their diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, or DEI initiatives, filed the defamation suit against the tech giant on Wednesday in Delaware Superior Court, according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, Starbuck is reportedly seeking more than $15 million in damages from Google. Now, most of these claims relate to hallucinations and Bard that we addressed in 2023, a Google spokesperson told the Post. Oh, you mean lies?
Yes, in this case, damn lies.
Yeah, hallucinations are a well-known issue for all LLMs. Oh, lies, you mean, okay, which we disclose and work hard to minimize. Now, according to the spokesperson, if you're creative enough, you can prompt a chatbot to say something misleading. Now, we'll review the complaint when we receive it, the company rep said. In other words, like, yeah, fuck you, have a nice day. Now, according to Starbuck, Google's AI didn't just lie, but it built fake worlds to make its lies look real, creating fake victims, fake therapy records, fake court records, fake police records, fake relationships, and fake news stories. Now, one of the most obvious ones pointed out in some of the discussion around this, and he was allegedly accused of murder in 1991. Guess how old he was in 1991? 2 years old.
Hey, you know those little fuckers, those little toddlers, those little crotch crickets, those little curtain climbers, they be running around with fucking knives, just fucking stabbing the fuck out of people, you know. It's like a fucking living Chucky doll.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, but I mean, these people are, so what else are they fucking lying about? That's what I want to know, right? It's so obvious that you just kind of look at this and you go, why do people trust this shit? If they can invent shit that's just completely not true, but, you know, again, one of the smartest people we know, people don't always want the truth, so.
No, that's exactly it.
Yeah, well, hopefully the tide is turning and we'll start seeing that, but, yeah, I think speaking of some lies, I think we need to go to the junk drawer for
this
next
one. Let's rummage around a little.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Well, this one's quite interesting because apparently AI deepfakes are fueling a digitally enabled crime wave in the freight industry.
He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking.
Cargo theft across North America is rapidly evolving from the traditional trailer break-ins to sophisticated digital fraud schemes that use artificial intelligence, social engineering, and marketplace reselling to move stolen goods faster than ever before, according to experts that told FreightWaves this. Criminals have realized they can commit theft without ever touching the freight, Danny Raymond, director of intelligence and response at supply chain risk firm Overhaul, told FreightWaves. They're lowering their physical risk and scaling operations digitally, sometimes pulling off multiple thefts a day. Raymond said organized cargo networks are increasingly adopting AI-generated voices and synthetic identities to bypass verification calls or create fake carrier profiles. AI, just like it is in the business world, is a force multiplier in the criminal world as well, Ramon said. Unfortunately, it's adding efficiency. It's sometimes the appearance of legitimacy, especially to social engineering and phishing attacks. AI now is making these things messages, not only grammatically perfect, if need be, but maybe just imperfect enough to sound like a person. The digital shift mirrors a broader trend noted by Descartes, account executive Danielle Spinelli, who's known in the freight industry as the Fraud Girl and hosts the Tell Me Everything podcast. Brother, everybody's got a fucking podcast. So I've heard of brokerages getting phone calls from AI bots on the carrier side. They're trying not to sound Middle Eastern or raise red flags, just to sound like a typical call, Spinelli said. If you're dispatching, ask drivers real-time questions, like about the weather or their surroundings, instead of routine ones, because that's what the bots are programmed to answer. And that's a really good point. You know, actually, here's a thought. Actually engage with your fucking drivers like they're humans. Wow! Amazing! Mind-blowing! Whoa! So, cargo thefts in the U.S. increased 33% year over year in the second quarter to 525 incidents, according to Overhaul's Q2 2025 cargo theft report. Criminals targeted California, 38% of all cases during the quarter, 21% being Texas, 15% here in Tennessee, 10% Pennsylvania, and 7% Illinois. The areas around L.A. and Long Beach accounted for 36% of all cargo thefts in the U.S. during the quarter. And I can tell you, having been the company that I worked for when I first started had a terminal in Long Beach, and there's a reason that they padlocked all their trailers was, you know, this was well before all the technology became this, but there was still a theft problem of cargo down there, so it doesn't surprise me. But top commodities targeted by the thieves in the quarter included electronics, food and beverage products, and home appliances. I find that really interesting, but I think it speaks a lot to several things. You can sell the electronics for drugs. The food and beverage, people are fucking hungry. Let's just face it, especially with the government shutdown because of the Dems. You know, that thing you were talking about don't, or the post on the dong, don't feed the animals. Why? Because they'll become dependent on the handouts. I give you the SNAP program.
Yes. Yes. That's true. That's happening. We actually saw some press about that last night for Tennessee anyway. So, we did. Yeah, but I think another thing that people are getting fed up with is this fake meat stuff. And it couldn't have happened to a nicer company. Beyond Meat crashes on debt swap plan as fake food trend goes bust.
Eat steak, eat steak, eat a big old steer.
Yeah, that sounds good. Fake food company Beyond Meat crashed the most on record on October 13th after it announced that nearly all creditors agreed to a debt swap deal that massively dilutes equity shareholders. This is a scam. So Beyond wrote in a press release that 96.92% of holders of its 0% convertible senior notes due 2027 agreed to participate in the debt equity swap offer, clearing the 85% threshold required for the deal to proceed. Under the terms, Beyond will issue up to $202.5 million of new 7% convertible senior secured PIK toggle notes due 2030 and up to 362.2 million new shares of common stock. That sounds like common gobbledygook too.
It really does.
Yes. The exchange aims to reduce leverage and extend debt maturities. The transaction, while proving liquidity relief, will heavily dilute existing equity owners and underscores Beyond Meat's struggle to turn the sinking ship amid plunging sales and waning market share in fake food space. In markets, Beyond shares in New York crashed the most on record, down as much as 58% in shares of the fake meat company began trading in 2019. Fake meat has been an utter bust even after years of globalist billionaires and their allies in the fake news media tried to persuade the world that real food is bad and fake food is good. And of course,
did you get it? Utter bust.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Now, of course, that didn't last long as the stock rebounded pretty quickly after that. Makes me think that they just crashed the stock price to rebuy it back at a cheap price. Companies do that all the time. So
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yes. Oh my God. I think it's time for the last call. What do you think?
Christ, I hope so.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
All right. We do not have any voicemails, but go ahead and what I would say is go ahead and go to the next we have four last call stories, I think.
That's right. And this one is kind of interesting for y'all because protein powders and shakes have tested positive for high lead levels, according to a report.
I'm Hans.
I'm Dime France.
And we want to pump you up.
We're all gonna die.
So a new Consumer Report investigation has found that many popular protein powders and shakes contain high levels of lead. The report found that over two-thirds of the 23 products tested exceeded the nonprofit self-set safety threshold of 0.5 micrograms per serving. The highest lead readings were found in plant-based powders in more than two-thirds of the products analyzed. A single serving contained more lead than the food safety experts say is safe to consume in a day, some by more than 10 times. Notably, One serving of the Naked Nutrition Vegan Mass Gainer contained 7.7 micrograms of lead, and the Huel Black Edition measured at 6.3. Just another reason not to consume that fake-ass plant-based bullshit.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I actually did sort of go through and realize it, and we missed. There's actually a donation that came in last week that we missed because of how we did the show, and that would actually be Sharky with his monthly donation of $7.66.
So we need to give it.
Oh, you the executive producer.
Yeah, except the executive producer clip needs to be have its
it had a hiccup.
Yeah, it had a hiccup there. So, okay.
But thank you, Sharky, for your donation. We appreciate it.
Yeah, so we'll make sure that we actually get it. So, okay, let's talk about Timex resurrecting its first LCD watch 50 years later.
Timex, it takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Now, in 1972, Hamilton's Pulsar Time Computer launched the first commercially sold digital watch, but its LED screen was power-hungry and only showed the time when you pushed a button. What helped make digital watches practical was the eventual upgrade to low-power, always-on LCD displays, which Timex first introduced on its SSQ watch in 1975. Now, 50 years later, Timex is resurrecting that breakthrough watch, though at $159, yeah. Wow, that's a lot of money for just a digital watch.
It is, but I think it's also a matter of the nostalgia, maybe.
Possibly, but yeah, that's just, yeah, I don't know. And it's, yeah, apparently there's, yeah.
Some watch collectors, like my dad collected watches, that's probably some shit that he would get because it's, you know, it's not vintage, but it's worth something, essentially. It's commemorative, if you will.
Of course. So... All right, I guess we have got a couple. We've got another story here.
Yeah, we do, and this one is definitely personal for us. Why doesn't Cards Against Humanity print its game in the U.S.? Well, yeah, it's complicated.
It's obscene. That's the point.
The Cards Against Humanity staff really doesn't like Trump nor tariffs. They created a Cards Against Humanity Explains the Joke edition that ditches the game's rules and adds explanatory notes to each card in the box. This makes the project informational material rather than a game, and therefore, COC can avoid import tariffs. But it's fucking playing cards. Why can't they be printed in the US? Cards certainly can. But they admit they'd rather work with a single manufacturer who can produce some of the other products they sell that American manufacturers apparently can't make. Okay. I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'll probably marinate on it a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't really have a... I'm torn, and I'll tell you why. Because on one hand, okay, you want to bring jobs back to the country, make the shit people want in the country. I kind of get where they're at, but at the same point in time, if you're an American country and you're using a overseas country and then you're bitching about tariffs, and it, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that, and this is a right point out in the chat. Yeah, there's some woke folks in that group. So it is what it is. But yeah, but if you ignore the woke cards, it's fine.
That's true. A good point. Very good point.
Yes. Okay. And this last story. Oh, God. Butt breathing might soon be a real medical treatment.
Okay. That does it. Now listen. Why is it that everything today has involved things either going in or coming out of my ass?
Yeah. I've had many days like that. Last year, a group of researchers won the 2024 Ig Nobel Prize in Physiology for discovering that many mammals are capable of breathing through their anus.
I know plenty of humans that talk through their anus, yes. But hey, that's another story.
But as many Ig Nobel awards, there is a serious side to the seeming silliness. The same group has conducted a new study on the feasibility of adapting this method to treat people with blocked airways or clogged lungs, with promising results that bringing rectal oxygen delivery one step closer to medical reality. Oh my God. I can't even. I mean, seriously, I can't. I don't even... I got nothing to say. I mean, I'm done.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it, I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go.
Especially after that story.
Oh, that's a really shitty story. But you know, we'll see you in Studio 33 because you know what?
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you. I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.